Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Dan McDonald is with us of the Irish Independent. You're there, Dan.
I am, Joe. How are things?
We seem to be talking to you at the top of the show in a breaking news kind of a way a lot lately.
Probably too often. Too often, I would suggest.
So the news came through, a Sport Ireland email came through this afternoon to the effect that they are suspending funding to the FAI, and they say they will only consider reinstating the funding, quote, once all ongoing reports commissioned by the FAI have been completed and the recommendations adopted. Did this news come as a surprise to us?
Yeah, I think so. Well, it came as a surprise to me anyway. And just came as a surprise in the context of being in the room last Wednesday when Sport Ireland were being questioned by the Oireachtas Committee. And really, I think I remember writing afterwards that, you know, suspension of funding was almost like the nuclear option. And you got the sense from all the Sport Ireland delegates, I mean, John Tracy and Kieran Mulvey, they were the two who were maybe doing most of the speaking, that they really didn't want to do that. They didn't want to go that far. They knew that that kind of action has the, I suppose it has the knock-on impact of damaging the wrong people, or certainly, you know, damaging sort of worthy projects on the ground that get a lot of the Sport Ireland funding. But, I mean, there was correspondence that came out since then and the FAI statement yesterday, which I guess highlighted flaws and problems with the interactions between the two bodies. So maybe reading some of that correspondence yesterday, it's not that much of a surprise, but last Wednesday didn't seem like they were going to go this way at all.
No, it really didn't. But I think what's emerged since last Wednesday is a sense that the FAI are going to try and hide behind these ongoing reports. The Grant Thornton report, we knew nothing about that until yesterday. I mean, Sport Ireland would have only found out about it, I presume, in the last number of days. And maybe they've looked, you know, there was a theme last week when John Tracy was before the Oireachtas Committee where various representatives were asking them what their powers were. And there was almost a frustration on the part of John Tracy and Kieran Mulvey. They were saying, look, we only give the FAI 2.7 million a year, so our auditing powers are not terribly extensive. And at one point, I think it was Imelda Munster asked, would the FAI be able to hide behind the Mazars report? And they, you know, Sport Ireland said, well, we certainly hope not. And now Grant Thornton's been thrown into the mix as well. So you suspect this is a very clear message from Sport Ireland. They're saying no funding until all of these reports commissioned by the FAI have been completed. There's almost a sense, if you were to put it in layman's language, we're sick of all these bloody reports. Just come out and tell us what was going on with this loan. It's very simple.
Yeah, and it is cranking up the pressure ahead of tomorrow. I know that's like, you know, sport lingo almost, and applying it to a news story. But I mean, the timing of this, Sport Ireland know when they send that in the context of everything that's going on. You know, Sport Ireland know if they put out that statement this afternoon, it's huge. You know, it's taken things to another level, really. And you know, you go back to the history of the FAI and I suppose previous crises and the relationship with the government or the statutory bodies acting on behalf of the government, you know, are key. And when I'm just looking at this, you know, Sport Ireland funding cut, and it's making headlines, not just in Ireland. I see it's on the BBC website. I see it's everywhere. And there's an escalation about, you know, with that strategy, with that move, that probably, you know, kills any theory that Sport Ireland and the FAI were cosy, perhaps, in any way. And I don't think that suggestion was necessarily there. But maybe before last Wednesday, there was a feeling that they might be on the same side to some degree, whereas it would appear that their patience has run out. And the extent and the speed with which it has run out has really added another layer of pressure or scrutiny to this FAI appearance tomorrow.
Well, we've seen the letters between Sport Ireland and Donal Conway. We've seen the frustration of Sport Ireland that the FAI can't seem to provide them with any information about this €100,000 loan, that they weren't notified about it in the first place, obviously, when they should have been. It's part of the terms and conditions of the money, the taxpayers' money that the FAI receive. And John Tracy was asked four times, he had to be asked four times last week if he had faith in the FAI board. And on the fourth question, he said he refused to say yes. I think we can interpret today's action by Sport Ireland as a doubling down of that opinion.
Yeah, no, I think so. And as I said, you know, I don't really think they wanted to go this route last week at all.
No.
At all, you know, and the discomfort with that line of questioning was clear. And I've spoken to people who felt, as I said, who felt that really the disconnect between any disconnect between the Sport Ireland and the FEI might be sort of exaggerated somewhat, and I could see that point of view. But I don't know. I think now, I suppose the analysis of this, and probably can't go into it too deeply, but I mean, obviously there's relations between the Sport Ireland and the FAI here, but what came out yesterday is perhaps a dispute or question marks around internal relations within the FAI and the extent to which some elements of the FAI are happy with others,
yeah,
in the sense of how this particular issue has been dealt with. So, I mean, by Sport Ireland making this point, are they perhaps actually strengthening the position of those within the FAI who are asking questions?
Yeah, well, that is the other point which emerged yesterday. So there's the Grant Thornton investigation. And you wonder how long it should take Grant Thornton, who, according to the FAI yesterday, have been on site at Abbottstown for the last 9 days now and counting, how long it should really take them to get to the bottom of this €100,000 loan if everybody's cooperating. It should be a fairly straightforward, even just conversation. So there's that. And then also there was the FAI statement where they said effectively that even though in the past number of weeks, and look, I know it's hard for everybody to keep track of all this stuff, but the FAI said that the board were informed of this loan and the various aspects of this loan at the time, at all times. And then yesterday the FAI came out and said, well, actually, that may not have been the case, that the board knew about this loan, or certainly that everybody on the board knew about this loan. So that's another development in this story. I see, further to the point you just made then before we go, the Times Ireland edition this morning, Gary Doyle and John Fallon had a report, FAI duo want Delaney out, is the headline. A source is telling the Times that two FAI board members want Delaney to stand down, which further copper fastens the sense that there is disquiet and division now on that FAI board.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think there have been suggestions and speculation in the background that certainly there would be a couple of members on the board who would be feeling a bit uncomfortable with the way things have proceeded. And you speak to people who suggest there might be more than two. At one point last week, there was a suggestion there wasn't even two at all. But I think the way this is moving, and I suppose the messages that you hear, There seems to be put it this way. Across the time of John Delaney being on the board of the FAI, there's been no suggestion at all of real any unhappiness of any kind with any board members, and there's been pretty much a unanimous view on a lot of things. And you don't get that sense at all anymore. And that in itself is significant. And we may not know really the extent to which it's fractured, and there may be debates on the extent to which it's fractured, but the fact there's any fracture or splinter at all, I think is possibly telling.
What time does it all kick off tomorrow?
I think it's a private session at 9 a.m. and then the public session kicks off around 10. Trying to introduce some kind of football parlance, but kickoff is around 10, I believe, Joe, but it's going to be a long one. It may be 8 hours with a couple of stoppages.
Okay, Dan, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much.
Thanking you.
Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent there with the latest development in this FAI Sport Ireland Oireachtas Committee story.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Champions League games this evening. Spurs and Man City is nil all. And then Liverpool 2, Porto 0, the story from Anfield. We've seen the Liverpool goals at half-time. The Keita opener, shot from just outside the area, took a deflection. And then well-worked goal, not overly complicated for Liverpool. I mean, Porto didn't look all that, but well-taken goal for Liverpool. They worked a tap-in for Firmino.
Yeah. Yeah, great run, overlapping run. How many times have we seen that? Trent Alexander-Arnold, and then the composure. Just, it was a simple pass for him, really. Tapping for Firmino, but well-constructed goal, you're right.
Meanwhile, who's been the better side between Spurs and City for listeners just coming along?
I'm wound up. Because I was so much looking forward to this game, and it hasn't been the type of game I thought it would be. Spurs have been a little bit passive in their approach, almost invited City on a little bit. I'd expect them to be a little bit more adventurous, a bit more bolder in terms of going after Manchester City. So I've been a little bit, slightly, not disappointed, maybe that was just a little bit surprised by Spurs' approach. That said, for me, they had the best chance of the game, Harry Kane. I actually expected him to score. It was a really good opportunity. A player of his quality didn't take it. But all the discussion typically is going to come back to VAR because it was a huge decision made by the referee. Yes, Aguero didn't score, but it's brought the subject of VAR stroke CPR back into the public domain. And what's winding me up the most is Jermaine Jenner. I don't know the lad personally, like, good player. He played when I played. But Jermaine Jenner is typical of some of the attitude of players who have been adamant in terms of VAR has got to come in, it's a no-brainer, the game's moved on, we've got to help the players, help the officials, etc, etc. Well, all during that first half, all I'm hearing from Jermaine Jenner after that penalty was given is, oh, I'm not too sure about this, oh, I'm not overly big fan of the way we're hanging around. Surely there's a way. No, there's no way around this, Jermaine. This is what you wanted. You and your friends who are advocates of VAR, get used to this.
And you know what?
There's going to be more of it. There's going to be more of it, because there should have been more instances in that first half. For me, some was taken down just outside the box for a free kick. But fair, he was held on to into the box, so technically it was a penalty. So I want to know why VAR wasn't looking at that. And I'm not a fan of VAR. Let's have a look at why weren't they looking at that. Fernandinho slapped a little, left a little bit on Harry Kane on the ground, a little bit of a forearm across the back of his head. Some people would say, ah, nothing in it. Some people would say, oh, hold on, he hit him on the head there. That's a yellow card, possibly a red card. Why aren't they looking at it? This is the road that we're going down. So don't start whinging now. The people saying, oh, it's a no-brainer. We've moved on. It's too much to stake money. It's too important. VAR is the answer. It's black and white. It's not black and white. The referees rescind the decision and given a penalty kick. Nobody in the studio in BET has agreed with it. Everybody's saying it's not a penalty. It's relative. Mm-hmm. Is the referee making the decision? We've looked at the Liverpool game, a handball against Trent Alexander-Arnold went to VAR. I didn't see the referee going to the touchline to look at the TV. For me, the official in the VAR studio made the decision. So who's making the decision? Is the referee obligated to go to the touchline every single time and make a decision? Or is he entrusting that responsibility now to the VAR official to make that decision? There's uncertainty there. It's an absolute potential mess, and it's going to get worse, and we better get used to it. But this is it. I'm hating myself. I'm listening to myself here. I'm hating myself. I don't even like listening. I'm not even winding myself up even as I'm talking, because I don't want to talk about it, but there's no getting away from it.
Yeah. Jermaine Genius and his VAR friends. Oh, back in a sec.
The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Oh. I don't mind telling you, listeners, Kenny has not calmed down about VAR over the last few minutes.
Not even that batch loaf toasted. As good as it was, it's calmed me down.
He's just not happy. There are so many aspects to VAR that Kenny is not happy about. And I've had to sit here for 3 hours and listen to them. But I tell you what will cheer you up, Kenny. Match programme from the Republic of Ireland versus Albania. 2003, June 7, 2003. Don't worry, Kenny, Ireland won. But I'll tell you what, there was a young, handsome whippersnapper as the cover story, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that's me one big mistake.
Oh, yes.
One big mistake I made.
Look
at this. In the international career. That's horrible.
Kenny, just put your right hand by your chin.
No. There's very little excuse for this.
Just.
Do you know what that was?
That's lovely.
You got to let me fill in the blanks.
Can you try and recreate the pose?
Let me off for next
week. Recreate the pose.
I can't.
Come on.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Just into that camera there,
I was weak. It was a moment of weakness.
Come on.
I was bullied into it. That was out in Pontmarnock. I was obligated.
You just do it.
I'm not going to do it. Clearly, I'm not going to do it.
You're taking off your glasses. You are going to do it. Come on.
That is not me. That is not me. That's about it.
Oh, yeah. It's all right. I'll find another picture.
No, it was a commitment, as you have to do as a member of the panel, to do a photo shoot for the magazine. Probably the only one that I did. And in a split second, I wouldn't say I was bullied, but I was coerced into a certain pose that he was looking for. For a split second, I relented, and I've regretted it ever since. It's horrible.
Kenny Live. Look at that.
That's not too bad.
Serious.
That's not too bad, look.
If you're missing this, radio listeners, don't worry. Obligatory jeans and black shoes are away.
Palmerlic. It's definitely Palmerlic.
It is Palmerlic. It is Palmerlic.
I can remember it. I remember afterwards thinking, no, what have I done?
What do you mean it's aged wonderfully?
No.
Shane Hannan brought that in today. You can thank
me. Waste some valuable time here, Joe. The game's on and there's no need to be talking about that.
We've tweeted pictures of Kenny's photo shoot from 2003 with the official match programme for the Albania game. And I have to say, the pose is quite beautiful. I know you've got other images out there. We've got the Liverpool game on the top screen, so we can't actually see them. Yeah, so it's no good for us. But just imagine Kenny. It's black and white. He's got the polo neck on.
I've let myself down.
He's smiling. And he's got his right hand just artistically placed.
Oh, I know.
On the chin.
I know. It's horrible.
And just a little...
Very little defence. Very little. It was a moment of weakness.
A little grin which says...
Oh, no.
Come hither.
It's disgusting.
Oh, it's great stuff.
Yeah, I'll apologise. I mean,
what are you apologising for?
No, it is. It's horrendous. Well, let myself down badly.
We've thrown
a few times during me. I have let me.
We've thrown it up.
Not too often, but that was one of them.
We've thrown this on social media all afternoon. You'll be pleased to know. This has been doing the rounds.
Listen, listen to this. So I'm on the breakfast show this morning with the lads, right? Nigel Owens, do you know the rugby referee?
OTBAM. Yeah, no, Nigel Owens.
Yeah, right. I'm just kind of not trying to divert, but it links into this.
A little bit, though.
So, a big fan of Nigel Owens. He's having a bit chit chat with Adrian. I've said to him, how old is he, that Nigel Owens? 47. They've said, well, same as myself. So, spontaneously, I've said, do you reckon I look older than him, Nigel Owens? And there was a general consensus in the room that I did look older than Nigel Owens. It rocked me a little bit.
Did it?
And that's moving, obviously, that's moving the conversation on a little bit.
Oh, dear.
But if anybody gets an opportunity to look at a picture of Nigel Owens, I'd be interested in a bit of feedback. I'm hoping the lads was a little bit of a wind-up because that's a...
Do you think it's the hair?
Maybe so, but even still... I mean, that's pretty damn... I don't want to be too disrespectful to Nigel Owens, like I said, you know,
he's
but...
He's still actively refereeing games at the top level.
47 years of age. But, you know, when somebody... It's the first time... Somebody said something like, oh, yeah, you look a bit older than that. You know, actually, home a bit. Bloody hell. Do I look that old?
Bit of a reality check
I mean,
you.
I'm no oil painting. I understand that, but... I mean, that was... That was pretty damning.
That rocked you.
It was pretty damning. Get back to me.
We'll do a Twitter poll.
Get back to me on that one.
No, we'll do a Twitter poll just based on that little clip. Do people think you look older than Nigel Owens or not? It's a big issue that we're determined to get to the bottom of. I would say...
It won't keep me awake at night, but...
I would say you do look about the
back
same
a
age.
It rocked me back a little bit. I'll be honest.
I would have said about the same age, Kenny.
If that's the case, you've got to freshen the show for me. You've got to get a bit of young blood in here. I'm only going to drag you down.
Right, so we've had our VAR discussion.
Not all of it. We didn't talk about why the penalty wasn't retaken.
Okay, go on then.
Well, because technically there was three or four Spurs players inside the area where you shouldn't be. So that's a retake. Mm-hmm. And there was also Manchester City players in there as well, which means if Aguero had scored the penalty, should have been retaken again. So whether he scores or retakes it, VAR technically, as I understand, they should be intervening and giving that penalty again.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm sure it was in this year a couple of weeks when I said, every manager now, when his player is taken, when this VAR comes in next year, taking a penalty kick, has got to tell his players, if your mate misses the penalty, everybody surround the referee and demand VAR. He has a look at it to make sure there's not one opposition defender. Because I would say, by and large, 80% of the time, when somebody strikes a penalty, there's an opposition defender in the area of the box where he shouldn't be.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Yeah.
It'll put an end to it pretty quickly, but...
Well, let's say this is where we're going. This is where we're going.
If you have to boil down your big issue with VAR, it's that it's hard to know where the line's drawn in terms of when it's been used. Is that your issue?
My issue is, as it was from the very start, this is a Pandora's box. Be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm. And as for the penalty, Danny Rose can count himself very unlucky because he's sliding in a natural position. I mean, he's trying to block a shot and his left hand does go above his head. But I mean, in a way that... It sort of has to keep your balance. And we were looking at the BT panel and Rio Ferdinand and Jolyon Lescott and Glenn Hoddle were all looking at the same incident saying that's absolutely not a penalty. That is just the natural way that if you're sliding low to try and block a shot, your hand would just go slightly above your head. It's about balance. It's a natural movement.
Yeah.
And yet the referee ran over, stood on the sideline, looked at exactly the same footage and deemed it to be, well, I don't know if he thought it was unnatural or not.
Yeah.
But he certainly said penalty. So that's a big issue.
So these things are subjective, aren't they? I mean, rules, that people think there's rules there that's black and white, it's right or wrong, but it's how you interpret the rules. Each referee, certainly referees in different countries, and even referees in the same country, Premier League, will interpret those rules slightly differently from others. So those grey areas are always going to be there going forward.
Yeah. It does allow the referee to make a more informed decision, though. Now, he might still get that decision wrong, but at least he's going to look and at
what
the incident properly.
Yeah, but at what cost? Like I said, that game was dead, Joe, for a minute. I don't know how long it took, but it was dead. So in terms of the spectacle as well, for me, was what's driving this for me, in terms of the spectacle, the game, what we like, that energy inside the stadium, the natural flow of the game, that high-energy type of Premiership game, which we all love, the best game in the world, boom, boom, boom. And this is the buffer. This is rubbing up against it. This is preventing it. And it's going to be, and it's going to do more of it going forward. Because I don't know how you can, this is a juggernaut, this VAR. I don't see how you can stop it going into all areas of the game. The things that I've spoken about this evening, there's going to be more and more of these things coming up. Penalty kicks, potential sending off, second yellow cards that could be red cards. You know, team, you know, not free kicks not getting on the edge of the box when a team counter-attack and score the other end, getting pulled back. Well, if you hadn't given the free, there wouldn't have been a count. It's crazy stuff, it really is.
I understand what you're saying. Are you really that bothered by a 90-second delay, though?
Yeah, when it was five of them during the course of the game, yeah, I am.
Mm. I'm not bored during them.
And particularly when we arrive at a situation when nobody's, the split is 50-50.
I accept that
decision. I understand there will be decisions that we'll get right, but there's others we won't and we'll still be arguing about. Mm. And the natural consequence is that the rhythm of the game is going to be disrupted time and time again.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit over-egged. I'm sure lots of people will agree with you. I don't find it that boring or irritating when one of those moments is happening. If anything, it's a little bit tense and exciting.
Oh, you've got to be in the minority there, Joe. You've got to be in the minority there.
No, I may well be. Yeah, that's fine. I may well be. But it's here to stay, Kenny. I don't see any way they can speed it up.
They've got to rewind the back. You've got to bin it. If an idea is a bad one, get rid of it. Mm. Don't persevere with it. Oh, we're stuck with it. You're not stuck with it. Get out of it.
And do you not think they'll end up getting more decisions right than wrong now as a result of VAR?
They might do. But I'm not prepared to pay the price to get there, to get to that point where we're getting 10, 20, 25% decisions. I'm perfectly happy to live with it. And in terms of genuine human decisions being made by referees, linesmen on the pitch, they will get them wrong. I'm prepared to accept it.
And when you say
that's life, Joe, that's life.
When you say,
if people are looking for perfection, young kids now say, oh, we've got to get every decision right. Well, you want to get a bit more life experience. You're not going to get everything right in life. Football is a reflection of life. And you better get used to it, because things are going to go against you. You're going to get treated unfairly in life. You've got to suck it up and get on with it. And football's the same. Don't treat it differently.
And so would you get rid of the goal line technology then?
No.
What's the difference?
The only thing, because that literally is black and white, and you get there in a second.
So then actually...
you get there in a second.
Then actually that goes against the principle that you're advocating. So if we can refine the VAR process, then that might be something.
But you can't. But you can't refine the fact in terms of the amount of time it takes for the information to get from the VAR official to the referee, for them to communicate, decide the referee has to go and have a look at it, get himself across the pitch, have a look at the replays, have a look at it six times, have a discussion game with the VAR, get back on the pitch and give the penalty. You can't refine that. That's a fact. That's going to take time.
I think potentially you could refine that, you know. For instance, you could have the person in looking at the video make the decision for the referee.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where we're going as well. This is what I'm talking about, the Liverpool game. I don't think I didn't see the referee go to the touchline and have a look at it. So are we saying the referee's the last arbiter in terms of whether it's a decision, or are we gonna give that responsibility to a VAR official? Is that what we're doing?
It would speed up the process if you gave it to the VAR official.
So that's basically now the basic fundamentals of the game, principles of football in terms of the referee's decision is final. Well, now let's scrap that. Mm. We're going to make the official the VAR official.
It's a referee and a team.
Let him referee the game.
That's a referee and team. It's akin to a linesman being in charge of offside. The VAR official is in charge of the VAR issues.
But the linesman just assists the referee. Ultimately, that's a referee's decision.
He converses with the linesman. But I mean, if a linesman puts his flag up, the referee tends to give offside because he says, well, you've more information than me.
Yeah.
So it'd be akin to that.
Yeah, but it's still the same. Those subjective decisions we're talking about, still the same whether it's a VAR official in the studio giving it or the referee on the pitch.
Correct.
He's still looking and interpreting as he sees. We're still going to have these discussions. He's right, he's wrong.
Yeah, but again, that goes back to your life isn't always fair, kids. But you'll get lots of decisions right that you wouldn't have got right. And you could refine it that way. Mm. No?
No, well, not
for, it's not worth
not
persevering
for me.
With. I think no, it's worth
I personally, wouldn't. I wouldn't have brought it in because I didn't like it. I could kind of see where it was going, and we're on the road to it now, and I'm not enjoying what I'm seeing.
But then the logic would have to be you have to get rid of goal line technology too.
No, it's not. It's not, Joe. That's like instantaneous. That for me is that's the only argument. It's instantaneous. You get there in a second, and it is black and white.
And you
it's
don't,
not subjective. It's over the line or it isn't.
You don't think with VAR we could get to a point where within 15, 20, 25 seconds you have a quick decision from the VAR official, no?
Well, even if you get there, so there's an amount of time there. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm saying that there'll be instances during the games. I think you can get a dozen instances genuinely that you should be reviewing, mm-hmm. especially if that criteria widens in terms of, well, if it's an important decision, what constitutes an important decision? Well, that throw-in wasn't given. And because that throw-in wasn't given, they went and scored a goal. Mm. So every missed throw-in, missed corner kick, now suddenly in some people's interpretation, that's an important decision.
No, I agree.
You gave that. You shouldn't have given that corner. They scored from it.
There is a difficulty with how many steps back you go.
Yeah, it's hard. This is what I'm saying. There's no way around. There's no easy solution
to
that.
Don't be so defeatist, though. We'll figure it out, Kenny.
I'm being realist. I'm not being defeatist. I think I'm being realistic with it.
No, I definitely accept there is an issue with how many steps further back you go. There's a text in from Liz and Rahini. Joe Nigel Owens is just 10 days older than our Kenny. Did you know that?
Well, I knew he's the same age. He's 47. I was told he's 47. She actually hasn't said, what's the girl's name? Sorry?
Liz and Rahini.
Liz, did she add whether she actually, who looks the older? Who looks the more aged?
No, I think she may have been
Who did she think has lived?
I think
she's
trying
the harder to
safeguard your feelings there.
Oh, no, I'll be interested if you can say so.
Oregon Cork's texted in.
Yeah.
He has an opinion. Nigel looks older. There you go. There you go. Would Kenny have liked VAR the time Henry handled the ball against Ireland?
No. I'm pretty consistent on this. I'm prepared to accept it. I'm prepared to accept that all of those mistakes. I believe genuinely that they're made with good intention. They're genuine mistakes made by their human error. And I'm prepared to accept human error. I've no problem with that whatsoever.
Would you not accept that there is so much at stake for these
players? No, so much at stake. What's at stake?
A World Cup.
The clubs have never had so much money.
A World Cup
money.
For Ireland in 2009.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's how strongly I feel,
You don't think
that's what it takes?
You don't think that was
No, I'm not going to make an exception. I feel strongly on this and the point of principle, apart from that one that went against us, against France. Of course not. If it's a point of principle, it's a point of principle, regardless of who it is.
Well, if you're going to get into the point of principle argument with me, then you have to get rid of goal line technology. You're either basing it on principle or you're not.
No, I'm not.
You're tying yourself up
in knots. I've made my argument on that particular one.
It's either a principle argument or it's a...
Well, if you're going to hang it on that, I'll get rid of that. If you're going to hang on that, I'll get rid of that. But I've no problem with that.
You want to get rid of goal line technology?
Oh, I've no problem. If you're saying that, if that's what you're going to hang me on, I'll get rid of that as well.
You've just abandoned your principles.
No. I will stick with it for the reasons that I've said.
Okay. Jeez, Kenny, I don't know now. I'm disappointed with you. I think we could refine this and have VAR chugging along lovely in a couple of years.
Well...
Hi lads, it's great to hear the Irish football philosopher Kenny Descartes in full flow, says Jim in Dunboyne. He's enjoying tonight, Kenny. Worst part of VAR is the players pressurising the refs, says Harry.
Well, look. No, it's a great point.
The players pressurise the refs regardless.
You're going to see more of it. You're going to see more of it.
Again, this all
They're
going to
be encouraged. Managers are going to encourage it.
This all comes down to refining the process, and I guarantee you. Why are we... Like, let's not rush into willful defeatism here.
No. I'm just based on what I've seen already and potentially what's coming down the line. I think it's going to get worse. Mm. I don't think this is going to get better. I don't think we've seen the worst of it. It's going to get far worse. And I can't see how it's going to get better.
Liz and Rahini has come back with a bombshell. And I mean a bombshell.
Is she a rugby fan? Is she a big rugby fan?
Kenny and I share a birthday.
Yeah?
Whew. Though she adds, he looks younger. Liz and Rahini with an X.
Yeah, but Liz is 73. Let's be fair.
Oh, dear. Any other texts? The Man U VAR decision against PSG took 3 minutes from the initial decision to when the penalty hit the back of the net, and then the referee played a further 6 minutes. It was mad, says Jane Dublin. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to speed things up. I would totally accept that. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I'm just saying we're way too early in VAR's life to get rid of it. Kenny says no.
Yeah.
Out of principle.
No, well, I think you're right. They're going to roll it in next season. It'll be really interesting, but I'm really sceptical. I fear the worst.
Okay. No, fair enough. Look, lots of people will probably agree with you. Maybe you're in the majority, to be honest. 60 minutes gone in the Champions League games this evening. Liverpool 2, Porto 0. And then Spurs 0, Man City 0. Just while we were rabbiting on there, Harry Kane went over on his ankle, which is bad news for Spurs. Harry Kane obviously has
a fair old history of ankle problems, and he seemed to walk down the tunnel straight away. I presume he's gone off. Yeah, Harry Kane off. That's a big blow. 58 minutes,
Joe,
Harry Kane went off.
Joe,
he does his ankle very regularly.
He's had one of those nights. I've seen it happen a couple of times with him when he's got involved early on with people. He went down under a challenge from Mendy in the penalty box holding his face.
Yeah.
I saw the replay. I didn't see the contact.
Right.
And then he went in for a challenge with Fernandinho, threw himself to the... You know, getting himself involved and that, trying to wind up opponents. For me, I hate to see that. With Kane, Kane's at his best for me. He's absolutely ice cool.
He's
detached from all those type of things, just concentrating on other aspects of his game.
Yeah.
So I've been a little bit disappointed with Kane's contribution tonight. And it's interesting because I'd referenced that text that you sent in earlier.
Yeah.
From that lad, who I can't remember Kieran. His first name. Yeah, remember he phoned in saying in terms of how big a miss... I think his point was, how big a miss is it with Kane out of the team?
Kenny, he didn't phone in. Not live line.
He made contact with us. So I don't embarrass myself to make that point. So I think that's relevant this evening in terms of the type of night that...
Kenny.
With the Morse code, whatever... But I think that is interesting in terms of how the night's gone for Kane. Who's on? Is Amora on?
Any other callers? Ronan, any other callers? All right, listen, we're going to take an ad break. Next up, we're going to talk to... Next up, we're going to talk to Darrell Horgan.
Football on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Darrell Horgan is doing rather well for himself. He was at Preston, obviously, until the summertime, and decided to make a move up to Scotland to get a bit more first-team football, and it has worked. He's played 29 times for Hibs this year. He's had 9 assists. He's scored 7 goals, and at the weekend in the Tynecastle Derby, Hibs won 2-1 away from home, and it's fair to say Darrell Horgan was the star of the show. We spoke to him earlier on.
Mulroney there to win the ball, and it's neat and tidy from Camberi to Mallon, and Horgan! It's a double from Darrell Horgan, and is there about to be a reshuffle in the natural order in Edinburgh? Well, this is simply a brilliant goal, a team goal, well worked, but what a finish from Horgan. Passes, he follows. That is a brilliant finish. That really is. Left footed into the corner. Could say maybe against the run of play. But what a goal and what an impact Horgan, that man, has had on this tie.
Yes, indeed. Darrell Horgan, hello.
Joe, how are you?
Good. That must have felt very sweet.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, to be honest with you. Obviously, such a big game for everyone involved, and to get the 2 goals was special, all right.
And what a second goal as well. I mean, the first goal was no bad thing either, but the second goal was a beautiful bit of football. Neat and tidy, the commentator said, but a real quality as well, and then the finish.
Yeah, lovely kind of team goal, you know, just real sharp in around the box, and, you know, fell to me, and thankfully I went in when I hit it.
Yeah, so... I guess we just wanted to check in and see how things are going. From afar, it looks like they're going well. 30-odd appearances, I mentioned beforehand there. You've scored goals, you've made assists, you're getting football. How are you finding it?
Yeah, good. Really, really enjoying it now. Obviously, the last couple of months have been a bit better. We've been on a brilliant run. Kind of kicked right up the table. We were, I think, when the new manager came in, 11 points behind Hearts. So to claw them back and jump over them, going into the split was brilliant, you know. And obviously, new manager coming in, what was the aim for everyone? And it was to get in that top 6. And thankfully, we did that. And now we're going to have to try push on, keep away from Hearts, and cast Kilmarnock and Aberdeen if we can.
Yeah. So if you go back to your reasons for moving, it was fairly clear you wanted first-team football. At Preston, things had gone well initially under Simon Grayson. I think you played about 20 times, looking back through the stats. And then under Alex Neil, I think of all your starts, maybe just 2 of them weren't off the bench. And in fairness, he said he was sorry to see it go. Maybe the way Preston played under him didn't suit you. But ultimately, you wanted to play first-team football.
Yeah, look, ideally, you want to play as much as you possibly can. You know, it's a short career. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was kind of sit in stands and, you know, just become a lad who's just going to train, you know, and kind of not be a part of it. Like, and... obviously, look, I had a great time. At Preston last year was difficult, though. You know, you want to be a big part of things and play as much as you possibly can. And unfortunately, that didn't really happen. You know, and the lads done really well. It was difficult for me to get in, and you know, the time was right to move. And you know, thankfully, Hibs came in and made a good offer for us, and I was delighted to go and get up there and have an opportunity to get in a first team, and thankfully I have.
What was it about the Alex Neil system that mightn't have suited you?
I think he saw me more as kind of an out of the touchline winger, one-on-one with defenders, getting at them crosses, things like that, where I think he wanted lads kind of playing at them inside forward roles nearly, you know, and I think he thought he had players who were more suited to that, you know. He played Shawnee out there quite a bit, and Callum Robinson, you know, and there was just a few players who were ahead of me, and you know, he probably just, as you said, he just thought they were better players, and sometimes that's just the way it goes, you know, and not much you can do. You just get the head down, work away, but maybe sometimes he had his mind made up, and that was it, you know. And I've absolutely nothing against the guy. He's done a really, really good job there, so you know, it was just time for me to go, and as I said, thankfully Hibs came in.
And how do you see yourself as a player? Because I suspect if Alex Neil saw your two goals at the weekend, then, you know, there's a touch of inside forward off them, I would have thought.
Yeah, look, maybe. It's hard to judge. I like to think I could do a bit, you know, and kind of adapt to any formation as much as I possibly can, really, you know. So I suppose the way the new manager has us playing here now, it's kind of a 4-3-3 or a 4-4-2, but he wants, you know, centre forwards in the box, like, and, you know, he wants his wingers in the box and in and around the box to be an opportunity to either score goals or, you know, create. And so that's the aim for me, and that's what I've been trying to do since he's come in.
Sounds quite enjoyable, you know, getting in around the box, attacking football, scoring goals. That's right up your street, I would have thought.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's been really good. You know, there's a good structure to the way we're playing. You know, we're solid from the front right the way back, and, you know, we're creating chances and scoring goals. So, you know, long may it continue.
What were your options in July, Daryl? Was it just Hibs who were in for you, or was there other interest?
There was a bit, bits and pieces. To be honest, Hibs had come in early doors, you know, kind of May, June time, when I thought I'd be able to leave, you know. But it looked like it wasn't going to happen. You know, obviously I played the first game for Preston this year, and then it just kind of, it all opened up where there was bits and pieces happening, but I was kind of only interested in Hibs then. You know, there was a couple other clubs come in, but I said, look, see if Hibs, they said to my agent, see if Hibs are still available for me to go. And it went up, and straight away, yeah, brilliant. And, you know, got it done as quick as possible.
So you had no qualms whatsoever about leaving English football? You weren't desperate to stay in the Championship at all costs?
No. Well, like, you know, I was kind of looking at, do I go somewhere where I'll maybe be in a similar position, you know, where someone's just taking a punt at you late in the window, and you're kind of coming in maybe as cover to the lads they're already happy with and have there. You've not done a pre-season with them, or are you going to a club that want you from the off, where there's an opportunity to play, you know? And obviously, I'd still miss pre-season. The lads had gone on a great European run, but I was kind of coming in knowing I was wanted there, you know, and that it wasn't kind of last day of the window, bargain bucket, who can we get, who's available. So it was one of them where I just felt it was a good opportunity and a good place for me to go. And, you know, so far it's gone quite well.
What was your relationship like with Neil Lennon?
Yeah, it was pretty good, you know. He's, I suppose, just a kind of a, what's the best way, slightly different ideas between himself and the new manager now. But, you know, he wanted to play attacking football on the ground, then get forward, score goals, create chances. I suppose my biggest issue, he more saw me as a 10, really.
Right.
You know, as much as you'd like to try your best in every role you possibly can, sometimes it didn't work. I wasn't as used to it as I'd like to have been, you know, and sometimes it went well, sometimes it didn't. But, and then I suppose for whatever reason, the results didn't go our way, whether, you know, it was ourselves, the players and the manager, everyone kind of has to take a bit of the brunt on that one, you know. It just, for whatever reason, didn't click, and unfortunately he moved on and, you know, the manager's come in and we've hit the ground running since then.
Yeah, you sure have. Chemistry, especially when you're talking about that many different people, is a complicated thing, and there were reports of Lennon involved in heated exchanges, and I'm sure that happens in football all the time. Did he leave under a bit of a cloud, or how was that departure handled?
I suppose you're always leaving under a cloud. That's just the way football is. You know, it's never really, very, very rarely going to be an amicable thing. No one wants to leave their job. You know, especially a job he's been there for obviously 2.5 years. But look, obviously there was a few disagreements and discussions, but nothing that you wouldn't have seen before. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, there was, you know, obviously we had been beaten by Motherwell the week leading up to it, and he wasn't happy. No one was happy. So everyone kind of had words. It wasn't anything that I hadn't seen before.
I guess in a similar way to your experience with Simon Grayson and then Alex Neil, there's always that worry as a professional footballer about the new man coming in. So Paul Heckingbottom wasn't heralded as a massive appointment for Hibs by any means. He's done brilliantly. I mean, 6 wins, 2 draws. You've gone from 8th to 5th in the Premiership, as we're saying. When do you get an early feeling that this guy rates you and likes you?
He actually had tried to take me to Barnsley before.
That's a good start.
When I went to Preston, so that was a decent start. And I'd been on trial at Barnsley when he was head of youth over there. So I kind of passed it across once or twice. So I knew there was that he had rated me at one stage. Obviously, I had to show him I was still at that level that I was, you know. And thankfully, he's shown a lot of faith to me. He's put me in, played me pretty much every game, you know. Mm. So it's been really, really good.
It's amazing what confidence does, isn't it? And knowing that your manager has confidence in you. We see it in players all the time. The same player, same ability, same fitness levels, but just the belief of a manager can transform what you're able to do.
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it? You know, for whatever reason, I really, really don't understand it. It's just confidence is huge. The longer I'm in the game, the more I realise how important it is. Like, you know, when someone, I suppose, that has that belief that, you know, give you that freedom to go out and do, play your game and, you know, have the confidence in your game, then for whatever, you get that extra yard quicker, you know, you get that bit sharper, things fall for you in the box, you know.
I think probably you don't second guess yourself as much. You're not possibly worried about every decision, you know, what does he think of what I'm doing right now, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's possibly it as well. You know, you just play kind of more off instinct, maybe, and I suppose that's probably the best way to do it anyway, isn't it?
Do you work on your confidence in any psychological way, any techniques? Do you do anything to work on your confidence?
No, not particularly. Right. You know, there's a fella at the club, you know, who's a kind of sports psychologist. I chat to him a bit, you know, every now and then, like, and there's one thing he's kind of said to me there a couple of months ago that kind of stuck with me, you know, kind of be the grey man, you know, have no kind of emotion when it comes to it. And that was a big thing for me, you know, especially I get kind of wrapped up in it at times, you know, I get very, very frustrated with myself playing. So to be able to have that, you know, kind of, don't lose the rag, don't lose the head, it's only a mistake, it happens, don't worry about it, it'll come again. Mm. So things like that was a good kind of indicator for me, you know, that he had seen that and that it was something I should do.
And have you noticed yourself going a little bit easier on yourself during games?
Maybe not going easier, but I switch off it quicker.
Okay.
You know, I still get frustrated, but it doesn't last, whereas it might have affected the next thing I would do in a game or the thing after, and I could build up, whereas now it's just done. Maybe get frustrated, but you forget about it then and just continue going.
Tell us about the move to Edinburgh. It's a beautiful city.
Oh, beautiful place. I love it up here, yeah. Scottish people are very, very similar to the Irish, you know. It's very, very friendly, and, you know, obviously coming up, you're moving into a whole new place, whole new team, but the lads have been unbelievable. They're a great, great group of lads there, and makes that bit easier as well. You know, obviously, you're moving the missus and the little fella up, so it's a big change for everyone, but it's been brilliant.
And have you gone in around the city centre, or are you living a bit further out, or what's the setup like?
We're living a bit further out, yeah. I'm not built for living in the cities. You know, I don't like that much hustle and bustle. I like live a little bit out, little town, about 20 minutes from Edinburgh, like, you know, so that suits me down to the ground. It's a nice place. Again, neighbours all very, very friendly, and you're not too far from the city if you ever want to go in.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I had the fortune or the misfortune. I was actually on a stag this weekend, so I got a sense of the excitement about the Derby game, and people were really into it. But it's a beautiful spot when you venture in around the castle and that old part of the city.
Oh yeah, the whole city, you know, anytime I go in, you see just this new building that you haven't seen before. And geez, that's unbelievable, you know. And obviously, as you said, the castle, the old town, everything. It's a really, really nice place. Kind of, we were here around obviously the Christmas time, the Christmas markets and things like that. And it was unreal.
It's important, isn't it? Like, I mean, you need your other half, you need your child to be happy. Like, if they're not enjoying it, then it's very difficult for you, I would think, to do your best stuff.
Yeah, well, obviously, grand when you're single and you have that, but when you have a family to worry about, you know, you have to make sure they're pretty happy. To be fair to Donna, she's brilliant. You know, she goes wherever, whatever's coming up. You know, any move in the summer, she was saying, right, we're going, it doesn't matter where.
Great.
But just luckily that Edinburgh's a lovely place and it suited everyone, really.
How have you found the standard of football in comparison with Championship level?
It's one of them. It's quite difficult to judge. Obviously, people have asked the same, but, you know, the League of Ireland, to whatever else. Mm. But it's very, very difficult to really judge, you know. You know, there's definitely, obviously, if you're Celtics, who would probably be a cut above the Championship, you know, and maybe there's a few teams that would compete at it. And you're probably thinking the rest of maybe compete League One, you know, potentially. And you really don't know. You wouldn't have said, you know, many Championship teams would have beaten, you know, Astera Stripless like the boys did this year. So it's hard to know at times, you know, sometimes. But the standard's good, you know, the games are very, very enjoyable, very fast paced, you know, kind of relentless. Kind of non-stop pace to the games, I found. And, you know, they've been difficult games. You know, you've no easy one. You know, you could, like, I suppose, similar in a way to the Championship, you could play a team bottom of the table and, you know, you get turned over very, very easily if you're not at it.
Yeah, no doubt. So, Scottish football in the headlines a good bit this year, sectarianism bubbling away as it does and as it has done for a long time. It's certainly not as intense in Edinburgh, clearly, as it is in Glasgow, but you must have encountered it across the season. Is it a regular theme at games that you're playing in?
Yeah, look, I suppose any kind of, you know, discrimination is just, it's just not on, no matter what. You know, it's 2019 now, like, where I thought we're past the Stone Ages. I think one of the lads there, I've just seen on, you know, Sky Sports News, got racial abuse in the Derby, like, which is a disgrace. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, what creed, race, anything you are, like, you should never ever get that kind of abuse, and it's not right, you know. To be honest,
was that in the Tynecastle Derby that he was abused, or?
Yeah.
Really?
There, we actually haven't been in with it a couple of days off, but I've seen it on Sky Sports, you know, and obviously the two clubs have come out and they've obviously
condemned it,
that's what I was looking for, yeah, you know. But it's a disgrace that that's still the case going on. Like, I haven't seen as much of the old kind of sectarianism.
Yeah,
you know.
So you're not
still pulling away.
You're not out in the wing getting your Fenian so and so, or your Catholic this, or your Irish that.
I haven't heard too much, but to be honest, when I'm playing, I don't hear much of what's going on.
Yeah, I hadn't realised that about the racial abuse. Was that a teammate of yours or opposition or?
Yeah, one of the lads playing with us. Yeah, right. It's just not on. You know, it's just wrong that someone who's just trying to go enjoy his football, play a game, is getting that kind of abuse.
And what ethnicity is he, Darren?
Mars Black.
Right, okay. Because it's interesting. I saw Gary Neville was on Monday Night Football last night, and in the last segment they were talking about it, and Neville was making a very interesting point. He was remembering playing at the Bernabeu back in 2004 when black teammates were being racially abused, and on the same night, Wayne Rooney had thrown a black armband on the ground in frustration. I think it was for Emlyn Hughes, possibly, the black armband. And it's funny, at full time, he was more concerned about protecting Wayne Rooney, or got more questions about Wayne Rooney than what had happened to the black players. And kind of looking back now, saying how ridiculous that is. And actually also saying FIFA, UEFA, clubs, powers that be, need to come together and decide what the best action is. Is the best action to leave the field? Is the best action to ban fans? What is the right thing to do? Football almost needs to decide, how do we handle this if it happens? Because it's difficult. Do you walk off the pitch? Raheem Sterling was saying yesterday, well, you almost empower the idiot in the crowd who shouts something and can almost end the entire game for everyone, ruin the whole point for everyone. But equally, it just can't be allowed to happen. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you would react if you hear that abuse of your teammate on the pitch. It's very difficult.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. And look, the thing is, no one wants to leave the football pitch.
Sure.
You know, everyone wants to finish the game, you know, and as you said, you know, empowering the idiot, you know.
It gives him a huge influence.
Giving him that influence and voice that he doesn't deserve. And, you know, clearly his ideologies or whatever they are so far askew that, you know, he has no right to voice them even, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
I suppose, look, as you say, it just needs to be decided from the top down.
Yeah.
You know, and then you need to have the sanctions, and the sanctions have to be followed out to the letter. Hopefully that would stamp it out, because it's just wrong.
No, it's outrageous. I have no doubt if the players were told the best thing to do is to walk off the pitch, or the best thing to do is X, Y, or Z, the vast majority of players would be really happy to do that. I think there's actually an uncertainty about how to handle those situations. Even a manager on the touchline, if he hears it, what's the right thing to do?
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, like, is the right thing to walk off the pitch? If that is the case, then yeah, walk off the pitch. Mm. You know, play the next game. Finish the game behind closed doors or something. I don't know what the best thing is to do, you know.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Do the other 20,000 people have to miss out because this one Egypt thinks he's a bit of a hero and he's having his moment in the sun? I don't know.
Yeah. Republic of Ireland, then, I would presume one of the big reasons you wanted first-team football, aside from just it being your career and not wanting to sit in the stands, is to get yourself into Republic of Ireland squads. You were in the initial 38-man provisional squad for the Gibraltar and Georgia games, and then didn't make the cut. Did you have a conversation with Mick McCarthy? Have you been talking to him? Has he been up to watch you play? How's that relationship beginning?
I haven't spoken to him since. He called us kind of when he got the job. I think he was just doing the rounds, calling everyone, you know, and just said, look, obviously, I'll be watching you. There'll be someone to watch you. Just keep playing away. And, you know, obviously, made the 38-man squad. Was obviously quite happy with that. Disappointed not to make the cup. But that's the game. You know, those lads doing very, very well. So, from now, I just have to keep the head down, keep working away, and keep playing. Hopefully, and try to get myself back in the frame. That'll be the hope, you know.
There's not really much else you can do. You know, you've no power.
That's kind of it.
Uncontrollables. Yeah. You just have to play really well, keep scoring goals, keep doing your thing. It's not like you can text Mick McCarthy every week.
No, exactly. And to be honest, I wouldn't want to be. You'd want to just get in on kind of how you've done at club level and that he sees there's an opportunity and a place for him in the squad.
Interesting, Jack Byrne getting the call up, playing League of Ireland football. Mick was actually at the game. He scored a brilliant goal for Rovers, and I think there was an injury and he got called in. That's great for the league.
No, it's brilliant for the league. You know, there's I've been saying it for years. There's more than good enough players in the league that could make that step up. You know, obviously, looking Mickey Duffy the last 2 years at Dundalk has been unbelievable. And there's far more players as well who have that quality, and sometimes it's just a bit of belief and a bit of luck, like you say, off the manager. You know, it's obviously not the done thing, but it's great to see him call him in.
So listen, we'll let you go. I guess busy end of the season, games are going to come thick and fast, and it's about finishing as high up as you can.
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, you want to shoot right up that table. The aim will be to hopefully get into Europe, and fingers crossed we can do that. We're 6 points behind Aberdeen and Kilmarnock, so we're going to have to definitely pick up a few wins.
Well, listen, thanks a million for joining us. It's great to see you doing so well. Brilliant goals at the weekend. They're on YouTube if anyone wants to check them out and didn't catch them. Keep it up. Great to check in. Thanks, Daryl.
Thanks a million, Joe. See you later.
There we are, Daryl Horgan, speaking to him earlier on. Top man, and wish him all the best. He seems to be going well at Hibs. So 89 minutes in the clock. Spurs are 1-0 up against Man City. Son with the goal. We'll talk you through it in just a moment. And Liverpool still 2-0 up against Porto. 89 minutes in the clock. Back in one sec.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now we're back. So Kenny described the goal. Spurs are 1-0 up. There's 5 minutes of added time. It was Son who got the goal for Spurs.
Yeah, really good play. Picked out by Eriksen. Ball over the Manchester City defensive line. They were holding the line on the edge of the box, which traditionally Manchester City do, which means if you can time your running behind and the quality of the ball is good enough, which it was from Eriksen, you can get in. That said, Son still had it all to do. He just about kept it in. Delph got back, who was the nearest defender, and it just goes to show you why sometimes you suffer when you haven't got a natural defender in your defensive line, because he didn't defend well enough, Delph. Instead of just staying on his feet, Joe, shuffling his feet, being patient, showing him away from the goal, he had a little fish. It wasn't the right thing to do. He unbalanced himself. That allowed Son to shift it another yard to his left. And before the pressure could come on from Gundogan, I think it was on the inside, he fired, rifled the shot. hard and low just to the side of Edison into the goal. So brilliant finish from Son, but really poor 1v1 defending from Delph in the left back position.
Very flat-footed. Kieran says, lads, I told you Son was better without Kane. P.S. I tried calling in. The phone lines were busy.
Yeah, well, we referenced it earlier, didn't we, before the game. Somebody we had
same lad texting in.
Oh, the same. Who was it?
It's Kieran.
Oh, you tried the phone as well.
Well, I think that's more.
Yeah. Now we gave him a bit of credit earlier, didn't I? I said it was a good point that he
made. Disagree with him?
No, I didn't disagree with him. I said not at all. I said there's a good argument there to be had.
Oh,
why
you?
Spurs do not disintegrate when Kane's not in the team.
Bit of revisionism.
I mean, he scored that goal from basically playing in a wide right position. So don't get me wrong, Moore has been playing, or Ali been playing down the middle. But you see the qualities that he has, Son, in terms of always attacking the space in behind. And again, you know, shifting the ball, working in tight areas, getting a shot off. Brilliant finish.
So it was a good example, by the way, everyone. Could be a chance here for Son again. Similar position, right edge.
Oh, didn't sort his feet out, did he?
No. It was a good example of VAR working well, by the way, because Son, the ball over the top, he miscontrolled it initially and it looked like it may have gone over the end line, and VAR showed very quickly that it didn't go out over the end line, and then they also checked on VAR for offside. It took less than 25 seconds and everything was fine. And it worked well, and it was worth doing because it was a big moment in the game.
The play was stopped, Danny. They're going back to the halfway line. And all I say, if VAR wasn't there, the goal would have been given anyway.
It would have.
It'd given the goal.
It would have, but it was an example of how it can work well. There's lots of texts in about the discussion you were having. So, for instance, Kenny is spot on. Would VAR have ruled out Keita's goal at the weekend because Salah was marginally offside nearly a minute before the goal? It will ruin the game, says Brian. See, I just think that's just willfully simplistic stuff.
It's not. This is potentially where it can go.
Let me finish. You just interrupted there.
I did.
We human beings have control of VAR. You can just decide certain points at which VAR goes back no further because they're deemed irrelevant to what's happened, Brian. Like, it will ruin the game. That's a crazy thing to say. It's far too quick to make a snap judgment.
It's happening before my eyes.
No, but sorry, you're not looking for solutions. It's just this, no, it's terrible, it's awful.
Nothing's broken. It doesn't need to be fixed, Joe.
Football can be improved.
The game has survived without VAR for a long period of time and thrived.
The game has survived with constant change and evolution. I mean, you would have been saying, why get rid of the back pass rule for the goalkeepers at some stage? The game's fine. That's not how life works.
Not necessarily.
Use the NFL model.
Change. Yeah,
go ahead. Use the NFL model to somebody. Each manager can challenge the referee's decision.
Oh, no.
Three times, for instance. If the VAR proves the manager wrong, then that team loses a sub. So there's even a...
Oh, no.
If you've used up all your subs, you can't challenge. It limits the amount of time VAR is used. Somebody else, why don't they do the same as the NFL? Works very well in the NFL. You have two challenges, perhaps, per team. If you are correct, you keep your challenges. We see it in tennis as well. I totally agree with that as a viable solution. If people feel, you know, one of Kenny's arguments was, it's going to happen 10 times a game, fine. Keep it to two challenges per team. For instance, as a trial, instead of just throwing it all out and ignoring technology, which works perfectly
well. Yeah, but that's a halfway house then for me. So you're prepared to say, I'm prepared to get some decisions right, but not others.
No. You say halfway house.
So you're prepared to accept.
I am prepared to compromise with you. Instead of just, no, this extreme has to go. Get rid of it.
Because I can see even that being abused. Say you don't use any of your challenges during the game.
Yeah.
And there's 2 minutes left in the game. It's nil all. You're desperately under the cosh. You're desperately trying to hang in the game. So now you're thinking, well, I'm just going to use these.
And you think
I don't care.
And sorry, you think there's no way we can't get around that, do you?
Well, I'm trying to ask you then. So there's a tackle. Everybody can see it's not a foul. You throw your flag onto the pitch. The game has to be stopped because that's what you're telling me. That's the rules.
Referee disregards that. Or else maybe.
Oh, so now you disregard it, you're throwing it on the pitch.
We can come up with a solution.
Something in that.
Well,
you're saying it's hard and fast, but now you're saying it's not.
Kenny, you're just looking for holes in very viable
solutions. Because they're there. I'm looking at the holes because they're already there.
In 10 years' time, my friend, we'll be sitting here. VAR will be well
refined. I hope not. I won't be here talking to you in 10 years talking about CPR. I'll tell you that.
I certainly hope neither of us will be, but there's a chance. Ruining the game, no way. Fans have called for technology for years. It may not be perfect, but I guarantee more right decisions will be made because of it. Give it time. Somebody else, Mac in Limerick, told me to shut up and that you had thought it through. So, look, people disagree with it. That's fine. Just sport at the end
Game's
of the day.
Game's over.
Spurs have won 1-0.
Spurs is night. We spoke about it.
Big result. You did call it, in fairness. You did call it.
Yeah, but I tell you what, the game didn't pan out as I thought. I actually disappointed in the quality of the game from both teams.
Yeah.
Maybe one of those is a bit of tension. What was at stake maybe crept into the mindset of the players. But in terms of the overall quality, it was actually quite reasonably poor.
Yeah.
Manchester City, I thought, played actually better second half and looked more likely before Spurs scored. But even at nil all, I was thinking it's not a bad result for Spurs. I really think they're still in this tie, regardless of whether Kane plays or not. Mm. But that 1-0 scoreline now makes Spurs favourites for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I fancied to go through. I had a bit of a good, not just a good feeling, that's too simplistic. I felt they had the players, the personnel, certainly tonight from what I saw, to win tonight. Now, they have won, but not in the manner I thought they would. And even without Kane, I still think they're more than capable of going to Manchester City and certainly scoring. I think they'll have to score at the Etihad. I think they will. Mm-hmm. And without seeing the starting 11 at the moment, I fancy them to go through. I'll stick with it.
Okay. Liverpool, you make firm favourites to go through. They've won this evening at home. 2-0 winners.
Salah shouldn't be on the pitch from what I saw. Yeah, VAR again. Leave it.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.